It feels really good to be together tonight. And I have some, it's going to be a field notes sort of a talk. A koan that's been present for me quite a bit over this period of time is the one where someone asks, what's the teaching of a lifetime? And maybe it's with me so much because this feels like a time of elemental questions. What will hold? What holds? What do you have confidence in? What helps in a time of loss and uncertainty and possibility and curiosity? What stays? What'll stick to your ribs? And the teacher answered, say something in response. What's the teaching of a lifetime? Say something in response was the first response. And I noticed that it can feel like a, you know, the way we feel sometimes when we, if we're, you know, like, oh dear, I gotta respond here, right? And my response matters, you know? And so that can be sort of a feeling that can come along with it when it's sort of taken as an instruction or a command or a, you should know how to do this kind of thing. But actually you're always gonna say something in response because that's what you are. Is responding. And so what about that? What about if the teaching of a lifetime is, oh, you're already it. just do that, you know. The student, though, wonders about it and asks, or the questioner asks, but what about when it's not the things I see and it's not what they're doing or something like that? And the teacher replies, well, say it backwards or say it upside down, you know. And say something in response. Well, what about if I'm sort of stuck, you know? What about if it's about something I don't know anything about, right? What if it's not a question about, what if it's not a question I know how to answer, right? What if it's not a situation I know how to deal with? Well, you know, say it backwards. Say it upside down. Seems to me like an invitation to play with it. Yeah. Rather than a, well, then you got to figure it out kind of thing. What if it's just permission, you know? So anyway, that sort of has kicked off a kind of wondering about responsiveness. Many of you have probably studied some about neurology, and And you know that our entire, or biology for that matter, you know that our entire system is a system of responding. That we are incredibly intricately designed for responding. And so much so that, you know, so far in the history of humanity, the complexities of our responding are way beyond our understanding. And yet, each time we make a new discovery, it's beautiful. You know, it's like, oh, how can this be like this, this intricate, this responding? And made for it, made of it. What if it's enough? This responding. Even while I'm busy thinking I ought to be other, I'm already responding. And what if it is actually the most beautiful thing about us, this responding, this continual work of art, of even when it's awful. So this brought in for me also another koan. That's really, it's a poem, you know, a quote from EQ that seemed to me to kind of echo this conversation. The instant that crow laughed, a hearer rose up from the ordinary dust. In this morning sunshine, an illuminated face sings. The instant that crow laughed, a hearer rose up from the ordinary dust. A crow laughing already includes a hearer. You sitting down already includes a seat. Something seen already includes a seer. And a seer already includes something seen. The instant that crow laughed, a hearer rose up from the ordinary dust. In this morning sunshine, an illuminated face sings. And Joan makes this beautiful comment about this one. She says, the song that face sings is the song the universe is humming to itself. We humming to itself, to ourselves, our big self. And she goes on to say, when we drop through the bottom of two-ness and meet the other as the universe talking to itself in the place where nothing's divided, where it's always been whole, in the instant that the crow laughs, the hearer rises up, already included. And the song sings itself in the ordinary dust. So I thought I'd bring a few field notes from this territory and invite yours. So first noticing about waking up in the morning in that liminal space of waking up, your whole being puts out feelers and is greeted by the world. You know, there's this kind of, oh, what kind of day is it? Yeah. What's the light like? What's the temperature like? What does it sound like? What does my body feel like? You know, and dreams, is there still something from the dream world that's present? Maybe I've awakened with anxieties. Usually we do with some anxieties or another. But not only, right? All we're already responding. And who's responding to whom? Am I responding to the morning? Is the morning responding to me? I don't know. What is aware of us? We don't know. And what do you do? What will happen next? And one of the things that's brought on this particular musing is the year of the ox. Some of us talked a little bit Saturday about, you know, what some of the things that are said about this year of the ox, about the nature of the yin metal ox, and having ox, one of the statements I read said, ox is dreamless sleep. The still, silent, calm, and slow power of winter, including a burden of grief, and yet a slow and sleepy time. Calm, easygoing, natural, dependable, steady. This is both sort of the nature of the time and kind of and the advice about how to work with the time and where does it come from? What is already responding to us? What is responding to our situation? Maybe it responded before our situation even arose. We don't know about these things. And we do notice as a time of endings, a time of seeds, a time of something being engendered, something moving in us, something coming through us. And I noticed as I noticed as I heard about ox and this year of ox, I noticed myself already responding, already feeling oxish, you know, going, yeah, there's something in me that's solid. There's something in me that's steady. There's something in me that's willing to plow the field. There's something in me that's gentle. There's something in me that's encouraged by this. Responding. And I also consulted the Wanyin Oracle at the new year, at the Lunar New Year, which was really this whole period in here of celebrated in China for 15 days, but certainly, you know, a long moment of a kind of turning here. And again, there's the mystery, you know, that the Wanyin Oracle, when I drew, you know, one of 100 sticks out of it sort of brought itself out of a tube, and I just pulled it out and found the number 68 written on it. And 68 says spring days, when spring comes and the days grow longer, the flowers bloom more and more luxuriously, all is set free at last. And the image is dark moon, yin in action. And here we have the year of the yin ox. Put things to the proof, submit to the ordeal. A time of the seed and the hidden pearl. Rely on the ancestors' wisdom. You know, it sounded so much like the advice given for the year of the ox. And I don't know why. And so there, one of the characteristics of our way is that we don't so much worry about beliefs. We notice that we have beliefs, that we question beliefs, that some teachings come down from us to us from our ancestors that could be called beliefs or could be called descriptions of their experience. And is a belief so different than a description of your experience? And so I'm loving the no need to believe about this connectedness, but I feel this connectedness. And I'm willing to respond, to notice how I respond to it. And I am old enough and have had enough experiences to sure wonder about how it's responding to me, this life that I'm part of, that I'm embedded in. Is this Zen? Well, the heart of the one who asks is Zen. This is not excluded, this wondering. So next, the cat. I'm fostering a cat. She's been with me for a few days. And I haven't had a cat living with me since my really sweet 20-year-old Thomas died some years back. And so this is the first sort of cat adventure since then. And so this cat had been in some difficulty. And so she's been spending a fair bit of time under my bed, but she's coming out more and more. And, you know, she sat in my lap last night for quite a while and actually came out to the living room. And in the morning, in the like 2 o'clock in the morning, I noticed that she was like under my chin. She definitely made herself at home on and around my body, although she's still kind of scared about the house. And I'm noticing how there's this dance of responsiveness between us and to the environment, and that my home is different with her in it. And she's different as she gets to know my home. And I'm different with a cat curled up next to me in the night. And she's different as she gets really comfortable. And so just this constant responsiveness of which we're only somewhat aware has its own delight built into it. It's delicate. So next, part four, in case you were counting. I've been musing about the mystery of handwriting. I love handwriting. And as I'm getting old, my handwriting is less predictable and less neat. But I'm just noticing that I love writing by hand. And I love the mystery of how squiggles on paper are make words and ideas, and how the word is different depending on how the handwriting is. And is it big or small? Is it neat or scrawl? And that it's beautiful. It's beautiful watching something come out of the tip of a pen from your hand. Whether you sort of completely irrelevant that whether you think it's good or bad is kind of boring anymore. It's mostly like, huh, look at that. You know, look how that one landed. And these thoughts happen so fast as you're writing that most of the time I'm not even noticing them happen, but I notice the pleasure of the event of it. And that too is a hearer rising out of the ordinary dust. A word appears out of the tip of a pen, and a hearer rises out of the ordinary dust there too. So one more, for instance, and then I want to open to conversation. And this one I'm going to play. I'll tell you a little bit the story of it. Someone posted something about his early study and love of Gregorian chant, and it, boom, opened up a memory for me. When I was 15, I spent the summer living with a French family near Poitiers and near a little bit closer even to a little village called Ligugier. And in Ligugier, there was a monastery. There still is, apparently, I found out. And the monks of that monastery are noted for two things. One is that they make enamel, not exactly reproductions, but representations of paintings by famous French painters, and probably not famous. I don't even know whether Houle is the one that stuck in my mind from that year. And they were really striking, these enamels, because of the depth of color of enamel and the kind of sacred feel of it. And that, you know, enamels will hold their color for a very long time. They won't fade. And the other thing that these monks do at that monastery of Ligugier is chant the Gregorian chant. And they chant it at least every Sunday. We went every Sunday to church while I was there. And they absolutely filled my heart. They were transfixing. And it was just these monks, you know. And I had never heard men sing in that way before. And so I found a recording, actually, as it happened. I'll play you just a little piece of it just for fun, if I can. Here it comes.
Oh,
So like that. And their chapel was pretty small. And so of course, you know, the chapel becomes part of what the sound is. And I was just sitting there with four squirmy children and their parents among the congregation. But it was what I realized remembering it today was that that's part of me. That's part of me forever. And so whatever I sing, you know, and I'm not a singer, but I do sing for you guys, and whatever I sing, that's part of me singing it. And so that response that we have becomes part of each response that comes after as well. And it just seems so beautiful and so mysterious to me at this moment, as we go through this deep part of winter towards wherever we're going, responding on. So that's kind of what I've been thinking about. And would be interested in hearing what it brings up for you. What is up for you?